Recording.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. It is 8:31 on August 16th, and we are going to call this meeting to order. Please be advised to mute or turn off all of your electronic devices. Please note that we have our Attorney General Mark Harris present, and I'd like to read the mission statement of the Arizona Veterinary Board. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals, by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. And Dr. Janes, can you do the roll call?
Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Greger?
Here.
Ms. Frost? Mr. Lohe?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Ray?
Here.
And Dr. Janes is here.
Okay, great. So we are going to start on section number 2, the initial investigative review and action on the following cases. We're going to start with number 2, 23-142, in regards to Catherine Norris, DVM. And Tracy, if you can read the summary.
Sure. At the April 19th, 2023 Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board voted to open investigation with respect to respondent's conduct and her failure to renew her veterinary license while continuing to practice veterinary medicine. And this is case 23-142. The complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and the respondent is Catherine Norris, DVM. And this case did not go in front of the investigative committee. It was brought back to you for your review and deliberation.
Okay, thank you. And we have Dr. Norris here today.
Yes.
If you'd like to come forward. Thank you for being here. Go ahead and have a seat. And then I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak. Yeah, go ahead.
I just appreciate your consideration today. I am aware of my lack of actions having consequences, and I just would like to reiterate what I said in my personal statement, and that it was a tough time. I'm better now. The broken leg is a little bit of a blessing in that aspect. And I respect anything that you guys put forward today, and will comply with whatever you deem makes fit. But I'm very excited and very hopeful to get back to work as soon as I can.
Thank you. And Ms. Solomon, you are the lead.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Before I offer a consent agreement, I'd like to clarify, are you practicing now?
No, ma'am. I am off. I broke my leg.
How long have you been off?
Since June 23rd of this year.
Okay. Okie doke. Okay, and with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to offer a consent agreement with the adopting the findings of fact as stated in the investigative division report, the conclusions of law. Do we need to do them separately, or can we do those two together?
You can do them together.
That's with them. Okay. Failed conclusions of law. Number one, failure to comply, to promptly and fully comply with the board request for information per ARS 32-22-32-18 as it relates to R311-901B. And number two, failure to timely renew the veterinary license while continuing to practice veterinary medicine, ARS 32-22-33-B1. The order would include 1 year of probation, 8 hours of continuing education, 4 on governance or regulation of the practice of veterinary medicine, and 4 on licensure. Okay. Civil penalty of $100 per month for practicing without a license from January 1, 2023 to 4/19/2023. Or $350, and if not signed within 15 days, goes to informal. Is there a second?
Okay.
Tim, do the
we haven't done the findings of fact.
Yes.
Separately.
Oh, okay. Do those separately and then the order.
Together, but make a motion and second and vote on that first before we go. Can we do it all?
You can, you know, in this case, I think it's fine unless there's any, you know, issues about what the findings are going to be.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I'd point out that typically through January is a grace period.
Okay.
And we'll start the clock till February 1st, so I take that month off.
Okay.
And say it was 2.5 months practicing without a license, not 3.5.
Okay.
I agree to that amendment, to that change to the motion.
Okay.
For a fine, a civil penalty of $250.
And I don't know if, I mean, we don't run into these very often where they go this long after. So this is a little bit new, and I can't even remember what we've done in past cases like this, but it, to me, I mean, I think we have a veterinarian in front of us that made a mistake, and clearly made a mistake, and owned up to her mistake. And I don't know that the hours or the penalties or whatever are really gonna change the course of action for this doctor. And so, I totally agree with the findings of fact and that she did it, but I just don't know if the penalty seems in line severity-wise with what we're dealing with.
What I had in my notes instead of continuing education was just to require that you read the statutes and rules and then provide a summary of everything related to licensing within 30 days.
Yeah, I think that would probably be more impactful as far as clearly we didn't read our statutes and rules to know that, but I didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of me. It's the continuing education was my concern because of what is it actually going to do there. I think we understand the issue. I am concerned how long it took. Like I said, we don't deal with these this long out.
Right.
So the lapse in license, yeah, that's a problem. I mean, but we deal with that usually fine and move on. This, it's over and done with. But actually, the length of time it took, that was
the
more
effort
of a concern
to
for me.
Contact
because you need to be, yeah, you have to be in contact with your regulatory agency. So make sure you're paying attention to that stuff in the future. But that's all my concern. But I agree. I think more maybe reviewing is better than continuing education. I like that.
Okay. So would you be amenable to those
yes.
changes?
Yes.
Okay.
I will second the amendment.
Okay. Victoria, did you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, members of the board, just for consistency's sake, 2 months ago, the board offered a consent agreement for someone in the same position and issued a $300 civil penalty.
I'm sorry, Victoria, I didn't hear the last
part. The board had something very similar 2 months ago. For the sake of consistency, there was a $300 civil penalty.
And any fee or?
There was no
fee.
But was it 3 months? So it was $100 a month?
It was not based on per month. It was not, there was no discussion that I remember of how long the person had been going. But since we just handled it,
yeah.
That tells me that it was about the same time frame.
Okay.
At least in 350, you said 250, split the difference and keep it the same. Then there's consistency.
Yeah, let's make it 300.
Okay.
So I'd like to make it 300. With the review of the requiring a review of the both the statutes and rules and a written summary of each.
Okay. Good. Good with that. Those many changes there.
Yes.
And since okay. this is not a continuing education where it's a straightforward kind of class thing, if there's questions about how to do this, where would she direct those? Just to Victoria, or what's the? I don't want to put more on your plate, but just if she had questions on what we mean by summary, just talk to you.
I think that you should tell her now what you want.
Okay. So yeah. So what are you guys thinking on that?
I mean,
so
I don't want you to give us 12
yeah,
pages.
Exactly.
So, right. Just to be.
Right. I'm not looking for a dissertation.
Right. Right.
So I mean, just kind of reading the salient points in licensing and just kind of summarizing it. I would say.
And in particular, the lapse in this case.
Yeah, lapse and
I
kind
mean,
of
emphasize that.
Right.
Renewal dates, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So not a dissertation, but at least just letting us know that you read the statutes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Even number of years that renew their license.
And I would be looking at like a page,
a
page per rules and statutes, not like 10 pages.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay, are we good on that then?
Yes.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Can we do a vote call?
Yes.
Sure. Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Dr. James is aye. Mr. Lougheed?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, and we hope you get back to practicing here soon as well. So.
Thank you so much for your.
Absolutely.
Hope the leg continues to recover.
Yeah.
I at least could walk in. I didn't want to come in on crutches.
Take care.
Can't even imagine in this heat having like.
Well, that was not the car accident. That was something else.
She was a one-year-old Friesian mare named Murphy. Ironically, I was there too. Danced her hawk, and then she broke mine.
Oh, goodness. Okay. We are now on number three, 23-159, in regards to Larry Hudman, DVM. Tracy, if you can read the case summary for us.
Case 23-159, complainant is the Arizona Veterinary Board. So the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and the respondent is the Hudman DVM. After June 21st, 2023, Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened an investigation after reviewing premises inspections conducted at Kennel Care with Veterinary Hospital. And this case was brought directly to you for your review and disposition.
Okay, great, thank you. And we have Dr. Hudman here today. If you'd like to come forward.
This is my office manager.
Oh, okay. Yes, please come forward. I have you state both your names for the record, please.
Larry Scott Hudman.
Okay.
Omid Harbinger.
Great. Thank you both for being here, and I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay. I'm not going to sit there and say that we didn't do it on the correct way. I can give you all sorts of excuses of new techs, everything else going on around there. It's been difficult. I've been practicing since 1980, and I've never seen it as where it is. We are working to change what we've done. What really aggravated me was the day before the board came, the inspector came, we had done a full inventory, because we do them every 90 days, and no one was looking at expiration dates, things that should have been done better. But I take the, you know, smallest things. The girls that we have, we've had good techs, but they want to get done with what the inventory is. I'm not blaming them. So, you know, buck stops here. I can't give you anything better than that.
Thank you. I appreciate your honesty.
And thanks for taking the time to hear us out here. And Dr. Hudman puts a lot of trust. You know, I started at the hospital in the middle of 21 when we had our first like initial inspection. We had switched over to NVA, so we've had some transition there. Getting the culture built up, we know there's a history there of violations, and it's hard personally to stand by that because we're just trying to get it fixed up. And so Dr. Hudman puts a lot of trust into what we're putting in place and protocols. I know it ultimately does have his name on it, but he trusts in the direction we're going. And I know we failed, but we are improving. A lot of our staff is internally grown. Our technicians are younger. We've developed them. They are learning why these are such significant issues and why we have to meet that standard. And that expectation is put in place every day, and ultimately that falls on me for falling short in compliance. But I assure you that that is top priority, and this hospital delivering that is a daily goal.
Okay. The last thing is I want to say the inspectors that come out, they did their job well, and I can't complain about that.
Thank you, thank you.
That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
We fully understand that we failed on that.
Right.
We're really out there to help and educate people. We are not out there to.
So now that we have with NVA, we have everything is going into a spreadsheet. It keeps track of those. That day that they did the inventory, they got through it, the techs do it, they do a good job, but dates were not on there. So we're going into a system to where one, it's in the computer, and we put the expiration date onto the starting to put it on top of every single bottle we have.
Thank you. And Mr. Loheed, you are the lead on this. I don't know if you want to, if you have any questions or thoughts.
I guess my one question would be, do new hires ever, are they ever required to read the statutes and rules?
I have read them, yes, sir.
No. New technicians.
We do not.
Onboarding.
No, we do not have that. No, we do not have that as a mandatory requirement for onboarding.
So I don't have that in part of the motion, but that might be an idea. It's not that hard to read, and it's not that long.
I'm not going to argue.
All right, so the board opened this case, not just for this last inspection, but for repeated and uncorrected potential violations documented in three different premise inspections that occurred June 28th of 2023, December 21st of 2021, and June 4th of 2019. So the frequency of those was based on 2019. The board asked them to go back when we saw in a shorter time frame. And then in December 21, we saw some concerning things and asked them to make sure they went back again. So, I mean, that's why those three are that close together. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to move that we adopt the findings of fact documented in the investigative division report and the staff memo dated 6/9/2023 as our findings of fact.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion and a second to find the findings of fact. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I move to find the following violations based on the findings of fact as our conclusions of law. ARS 3222-33A1, unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, making false reports in writing on two or three occasions to the board and staff, stating that potential violations documented in premises inspections had been remedied. ARS 3222-74A3, a violation of section 3222-33 or any rule adopted pursuant to that section. ARS 3222-74A5, failure to maintain veterinary medical supplies, controlled substances, and surgical and other equipment in safe, efficient, and sanitary manner as related to R311-502D. When providing veterinary medical service, a veterinarian shall ensure that no expired supplies are used. ARS 3222-74A4, failure to maintain accurate records or reports as required by this chapter or by federal or state laws and rules pertaining to the storing, labeling, selling, dispensing, prescribing, and administering of controlled substances that are related to R311-502J2, R311-502K3, R311-502L7, ARS 3222-81A, a veterinarian may dispense drugs and devices kept by the veterinarian if, one, all prescription-only drugs are dispensed in packages labeled with the following information: the dispensing veterinarian's name, address, telephone number, the date the drug is dispensed, the owner's, the animal owner's name, and the animal or herd's identification, and the name, strength, quantity of the drug, directions for its use, and any cautionary statements. Two, the dispensing veterinarian enters into the medical record the name, strength, and quantity of the drug dispensed, the date the drug is dispensed, and the therapeutic reason. And those are related to R311-802. And then finally, ARS 3222-74A6, failure to keep written records of all animals receiving veterinary services, failure to provide summary of such records upon request of the client, or failure to produce such records at the request of the board, and that is as related to 311-502-H5.
Second.
Okay. I want to point out that discussion. I just had a question.
Yeah.
Can I still ask?
I have a question also, so we
So just going back, my one concern or question around that is the first, or well, not the first one, I think it was the third one you said, R311-502-D. That actually states, when providing veterinary medical service, a veterinarian shall ensure that no expired supplies are used. I don't know, do we have anything that's saying that we actually used expired products? Because that's my
only thing. On the shelf, he can't say that it didn't happen.
But J2, I think, covers that one. That's kind of my...
Which one?
I scrolled too far. So J2 says a veterinary who dispenses a prescription-only drug shall ensure that a prescription-only drug or prescription-only device is destroyed or returned to the manufacturer distributed no longer than 30 days. Since that doesn't actually have a use, that's more of a holding one. I don't know if D2 would apply, and it would all be under J2. Or D, I'm sorry, it would all be under J2.
So
that's thoughts.
It was my opinion that is... And I went kind of by what the inspections said. These are the potential violations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if it's overlooked that it's expired, mm-hmm. it could be, I would assume it can be overlooked and used.
No, and I agree with you on that. I just don't know, can we do that if we don't actually have a case of it being used? I just want to make sure that everything's good there. And it was just something I read and I thought, and that was one thing that stuck with me.
Then I would suggest that as a question for counsel.
I don't think we have to have it. You know, facts that there was actual use.
Okay, so it is okay in this. Okay, thank you.
Okay, yes.
Yes. I'd like to ask Dr. Hudman if you've ever accounted for the 84 missing tramadol tablets.
I don't know that I've been asked that question.
Okay. I'd like to consider directing that DEA be notified.
Well, Kim,
that's
later.
That's okay. Good.
Mr. Wookie, could you read the first one again on falsifying or misrepresenting or something?
The ARS 32, I mean, we have the documented responses that say, here's what I did to fix this. Mm-hmm. And then we went back twice more, mm-hmm. and they weren't.
What I'm struggling with is, I don't know if anyone else has had this issue, but I've certainly tried to fix things in practice before that didn't actually get implemented the way you wanted. And so while you might have written at a point in time that this is what I did to fix it, it didn't work. And it didn't work not because you were being unethical or fraudulent or whatever. It didn't work because communication was bad or the staff just didn't do it or a myriad of different things that could happen. And so I hesitate to say that was done out of ill intent. I don't know, it very well could have been,
recently,
but I just don't know.
And recently, I would argue we had a very similar case, and there was no discussion of whether that specific violation should be included or not.
Well, in each case, just you just
I mean,
read them different,
different,
and you read the people different,
yeah.
and you read whether they're being honest or not different. So I can't speak to that. I don't remember the details of it. I'm just saying, sitting here now, I'm not looking at somebody who I feel like is trying to be dishonest. And I guess that's just where.
Right. So I admit, I was the one that started off by asking if there were questions, and I'm just wondering at this point, do we need to move this to an informal if we have additional questions? I feel like
I
now
have one
we're
point of
going.
I have one point of information. Dr. Hudman, you were notified in writing on June 28th about the tramadol question, so.
I don't know that I saw it. That's all I can tell you.
It was addressed to you.
Can I just interject that again, I just want to reiterate that, yes, ultimately that does fall on him, but he is trusting in us to do that. And he was, the tramadol has been accounted for. It wasn't, yes, again, I understand it's on him. He's the premise. He's got the premise license, but he wasn't involved in the use of that tramadol and logging it. So that has to fall on our staff and myself that are making sure those logs are done as well. It is on him, but it's on us too.
And would you say because they've been accounted for, they're now accounted for in the log, and you can provide the log that would show that
that's
they've
correct.
Been accounted for?
Yes,
so
ma'am.
Maybe that's what we want to ask for, right? Just an option.
Okay, so.
So we have a motion on the floor in a second. We've
yes.
discussed a few things.
Yeah.
And if it's going to go down in flames, then because of two of these,
I'm
amenable to taking the two out. More so the unprofessional or dishonorable conduct than the other one.
Okay.
And taking that out, she takes out two, because 3222.74.83 is a violation because there was a violation of 3222.33.81.
I mean, me personally, I feel more comfortable taking that out or going to an informal tour. We could ask more questions about it just because I don't feel like I have a level.
I don't know that we need to ask more questions. We need habits and practices to change.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yes.
And I think when you document the findings of what was found in the premise inspection, that's when we have to say this is no longer something that can continue on year after year after year like we've been seeing, right? And we can ask for the logs and we can ask for the policy changes that have been put into place, and we can ask for things that should be preventing this from going on further. That's what I think is going to make the biggest impact.
Okay. So we have technicians, and you know, I don't check logbooks every day. I mean, you can go in there and it's like, okay, and was this done? I mean, I think maybe we need to do that for what you're telling me now, because I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, I think we keep good logs. Everybody's, I can't tell you that it's never been put in there, or put in there later or whatever. I do want, the girls are very good at it. I will stand behind them. Like I said, it's still my responsibility.
And I think that's what I would like to focus on is it's your responsibility to make sure practices are in place that this doesn't continue to happen. And if that's delegating to your office manager to check the logs every day, or if that's holding people accountable when they did it wrong, if that's a policy that says you're checking expiration dates and changing how you're logging it, those are all the things that you're going to decide internally in your practice. But those are the things that have to be documented. And really, I think that really should be at this point provided to the board so that we feel comfortable that you have made the changes that are going to prevent this from happening again next year.
Yes.
And that's what we have decided to make these long-term decisions and make sure that everything's effective, to delegate it through me and make sure that the policies are getting upheld between me and my hospital staff as well.
Yes.
And if we have to sit there and send monthly copies of what we've done for meds, whatever, I mean, I'll do whatever you ask. I mean, it's one of those things that.
Point of order, Madam Chair, we're not doing it informal, so we need to.
Oh, excuse me.
We invited.
We have
to the chair. We have these.
We have a motion.
We have a motion. We have a second. We've got these two. Arguably, there's.
Okay, so you took out.
If there's these two that we can take out, I will amend that.
Okay, so there.
I would leave the D, 11502D in there, right? We had that discussion.
Okay. So is there a second?
And is there a likelihood of it passing without those? Then I'll make that amendment.
Okay.
I'll second
that. We have
a
motion
and
a second.
Okay, so then I'll officially motion that we remove the first two, ARS 3222.33.A1 and ARS 3222.74.83.
Okay.
So strike those two.
We do a roll call or do a voice?
That can be a voice call.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask staff if the respondent has any prior violations.
Dr. Hedman had a consent agreement issued in 1996. It was failure to notify the board of a change of address.
Madam Chair, I move to offer a consent agreement with the following terms. Respondent's veterinary license number 3057 and the premise license be placed on state suspension and probation for 1 year. Respondent will submit a practice monitor candidate or candidates. Those have to be Arizona licensed veterinarians for board approval within 30 days of accepting the consent agreement. And we grant authority. Board grants authority to Executive Director Victoria Whitmore to approve a practice monitor on behalf of the board. Respondent will provide the approved practice monitor with a copy of the consent agreement. Respondent will hire an approved practice monitor within 30 days after approval by the board or its executive director to remedy all violations, train the respondent and staff, conduct random inspections of medical records and protocols, and submit reports of observations and progress to the board every other month until the board stipulates monitoring is no longer required. Respondent will review Arizona revised statutes, Title 32, Chapter 21, the Veterinary Practice Act, and associated administrative rules, and take the Arizona State exam and pass with at least 70% correct answers within 90 days after accepting the consent agreement. Respondent will pay a civil penalty for violation of ARS 32-2274A4. That is one dealing with controlled substances. A $1,000 civil penalty for violation of ARS 32-2274A5. And a $1,000 civil penalty for the other, well, if we took out two, then I'm gonna cut that. $500 civil penalty for the other two violations. And that would be a total of $2,500 to be paid before the end of the probation period. If not signed within 15 days of receipt, move this case to a formal hearing.
Okay.
Did you want a formal hearing or informal hearing?
Formal.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Should we vote?
After the vote, we would direct staff to reinspect, right? That's not part of the actual vote.
That's why you have a practice monitor.
Yeah, okay, so you guys are, you don't typically reinspect all these ones when the practice monitor is in place.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's do roll call.
Dr. Barron?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Dr. James is a nay. Mr. Lilly?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Anything further?
Madam Chair, I was going to move to direct staff to forward all relevant findings to the Drug Enforcement Agency, but I would hold off on that till we receive the new law, the corrected law. And if that is not satisfactory, then staff would proceed to forwarding that information.
Second.
Motion?
Yeah, do we have to? Is that okay? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you both for being here. I appreciate your honesty, and hopefully, moving forward, we can see better results. And if you do have any questions about the practice monitor, you may direct those to Victoria Whitmore.
Okay. I have a question. Will we get this written up and sent to us?
Yep, absolutely.
And how do I get to find you?
I'm sorry?
How do I pay the fine?
Oh, that will all be stated in the order that we send. But yeah, any questions you have can be directed to Victoria.
We're going
to
do better.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we're going back up to number one. wait for you. Okay, so now we are on number one, 23-125, in regards to Eric Roberts, DBM. Tracy will read the summary.
Case 23-125, the complainant is going ahead, and the respondent is Eric Roberts, DBM. On March 25th, 2023, Maddie, a 4-year-old female Maltese mix, was presented to respondent due to eating an insecticide. Complainant reported the dog had a seizure prior to bringing the dog in for evaluation. The dog was triaged and taken to the treatment area. Complainant was asked to provide a deposit for the initial treatment. Complainant initially declined. She was asked to call poison control and try to determine the active ingredient the dog ingested. During this time, respondent examined the dog, collected blood for testing, placed an IV catheter, and administered midazolam IV. The product had two potential active ingredients depending on when the product was manufactured. Complainant believed it was zeta-cypermethrin and 5-fenfrin based on the year she purchased the insecticide. Since complainant did not bring the product container, respondent explained that they truly did not know which ingredient the dog ingested. Recommendations were made for hospitalization for fluid therapy and monitoring. Complainant declined treatment and took the dog home. And I brought this case directly to the board for your review and discussion. Initially, Dr. Roberts did not respond to the complaint, but since this time has, I did receive a response from him on Monday. So his statements were pretty much reflective of the medical records that were provided.
Okay, thank you. So hopefully everybody had a chance to read his statement. We do not have the respondent nor the complainant here today. And Dr. James, you are the lead.
Yeah, so, you know, in looking at this case, I mean, obviously, initially, before we had the statement from the veterinarian, I was kind of at a loss as to why we weren't getting a response. I think that was kind of my biggest thing. Mm-hmm. But in looking at what happened, I think, as with many of these cases, the bulk of this is communication over the how this clinic operates, and emergency clinics do this consistently, but that $800 fee, what was that going to be used for? Do they have to get approval for that? How well was that communicated? You know, what tests were being recommended? And then, you know, I really struggle with the recommendation of a $4,000 overnight stay, and then the against medical advice and all this stuff for leaving the practice, when many people out there are not going to be able to pay a $4,000 bill, and there was not any other option given. So while I personally have an issue with that, I don't think there's anything in that that falls below our standard of care. It's just the way this case ran. Like, I think that's what's causing the issue here, is that there's a lot of people that would have been a really hard thing to come up with, and yet then they're having to sign away that they're doing the wrong thing for their pet. And so I think personally that's what caused this to get here, although I can't say that that's every individual veterinarian's choice, and I can't say that there's nothing in our statutes that says they have to offer other options. So I don't necessarily feel like I can find any violations of our Practice Act or rules in here. I think that the issues with the Valley Fever test, and it doesn't sound like that was actually even recommended by the doctor, and if that was actually done, that would be more of a clinic or a premise holder issue, not the relief veterinarian that didn't even know this had gone out. And then I would also say on this case, I know that Dr. Roberts ultimately responded, but I am concerned that we tried multiple attempts to reach a doctor, and it goes back to one of the first case we had, that you have to have an address, a phone number, or something that people can get a hold of you, and that you can be responsible for timely responses. So I would say, in the case of 23-125, that I would make a motion that we find no violations of our Practice Act or rules, but that we issue a letter of concern with regards to communication with the board and having a way to reach somebody in a reasonable time period.
I would just like to add, I know the $4,000 piece on there, but the estimate was from like $2,100 to $4,000. So the owner was focusing on that $4,000 number. So, I mean, again, I don't think that this doctor did anything against this. The rules offered good practice. So it's just these the numbers get a little bit out of hand and people panic when they see those.
Well, and I think there's a lot of people out there who taking the pill, knowing that that's not the best case in quality of medicine, but that's really their only option. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who that $800 was probably more than they could afford. I don't know about this case, but that happens day in, day out, and we have to be able to say, this is not what we recommend medically, but here, we have to meet that person where they are. We're not going to be able to do anything with that pet. So I think that's an issue in the profession, but not something that I can say this was below the standard of care. Obviously, he's practicing to a top-notch standard of care.
Right.
And that, but I think that's what brought it here, is not being able to work with the client.
No options, no plan B, nothing like that.
Yeah. It needs
to happen in a lot of these cases.
I mean, if you're going to take the pet home, give them...
We're starting to see it more.
Seizure medications.
More focus on the people that can actually pay money and ignore people that can't pay money. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but that is happening more and more in veterinary medicine. It's something that as an industry we're going to be seeing more of, and as a board, we're going to be seeing more complaints around.
I mean, and I think there could have been a plan that is, we're going to give fluids, we're going to give seizure medications, we're going to send your dog home, and you're going to watch for these signs, and the second you see them, you're going to come back. I mean, that's a very reasonable plan, and I just feel like that wasn't what was said. That's why we're here, but anyway.
So, Adam, okay. To your point of order, we have, yes. Don't do that in a second.
Did you say we don't have a second?
We do not have a second. We've had discussion, but nobody seconded.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to dismiss this case, but offer a letter of concern. All those in favor?
Yeah, I do have some discussion.
Okay, sorry.
I am going to vote nay. I think this ought to go into the formal, and I'm kind of surprised that the layperson, I'm usually not the one that picks up on medical records. They're insufficient. Other than one drug that I'll probably mispronounce, the midazolam. There's nothing else in there that says what he did. There's an estimate of what we could do and what it could cost, but there's nothing in here that says what did happen other than the exam and that one medication was administered. That's it. There's nothing else in there. I don't know what they did back there either. There's nothing in the medical record that says any of that. So I mean, that is, it's unclear if any fluids were given at all.
It didn't look, that was in the plan that was signed against medical advice, that she left against medical advice because fluids
were recommended. Yeah, but they had it back there for an hour and a half.
They didn't
do any fluids in the hour and a half.
No.
How do you know that?
Because one, that's what the owner said in their statement, and two, it's not in the medical records, and they said they recommended fluids and it was declined. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to assume it didn't happen.
Okay, but still, it's not in there that it didn't happen. There's an estimate.
Well, I don't put things in my medical record that I don't do. I put things in there that I recommend that are declined, and I put things in there I do. I don't put things in there I don't do.
I think she declined fluids with the overnight stay. I don't think she declined fluids when I presented my cat. Please take care of it.
I don't think they did fluids or even said they were going to do fluids at the time of presentation.
Okay. Then I also have a problem with the communication issues where both of them, I mean, I would think he's going to call. The medical practice is going to call the poison control center, not ask her to do it, and apparently they both did it. And they're talking to two different people telling them two different things. And they're not telling each other. I mean, she's trying to tell staff what poison control is telling her, but they're not telling her what poison control is telling them. That's why she questioned the x-ray. Well, they did the x-ray because one of that, you should be able to see the granules on an x-ray. That's why they did it, but they never told her that. And they got that from poison control. He didn't know that. So, I mean, that whole thing, I had an issue with that. I had down in my notes to move it to an informal.
Okay. I mean, I think there's a lot of communication issues, but I could tell what was going on. I felt like I could tell what was going on here, that there was a clearly defined soap, everything, all organs were documented, the TPR was documented, there was a assessment list, there was a plan, there was communication with what they said with the poison control. I think the communication with the owner, it says discussed with owner, presented estimate and recommendations of what poison control said. I see a lot worse medical records than what I would say here. So I'm going to stand by my first motion, but that's fine if we don't pass it.
Okay. All those in favor of, again, dismissing, offering a letter of concern, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. So motion passes. We have two nays. Okay. Thank you. I am actually going to jump down to section 4, number 1. So we have Ms. Moffitt here. So this is reports, correspondence, referrals, and other business. Board may review, discuss, and take action on requests regarding the clarification of interpretation of ARS 3222-42B pertaining to certified veterinary technician application requirements per ARS 41-1001.02. And we have Alexandra Moffitt here. And Ms. Moffitt, if you'd like to come forward. Thank you for being here. Have a seat. And Ms. Solomon, you are the lead on this one.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Moffitt, I do have a number of questions about the equivalency of the classes.
Sure.
And I'll try and quickly go through them. Office application, one credit, that deals with software use. And your response did not mention software specific or Word or Excel or PowerPoint, but have you used those throughout your 4 years of undergrad?
For several years, yes.
Okay. And is there any specific classes you can tell us that you used them in? Because we can't really do experience.
Yeah, no, so I never took any specific like software class like that, but yes, I can, we're looking at, I've taken dual enrollment classes through high school as well, so I started, it's my thought process back there, but we'll stick with what I submitted through ASU. I will say any of the English classes that I took, any of the honors classes that I took throughout from my freshman to senior year. Okay.
This was specific to that software. To move on, speaking, you mentioned English composition. The three credits deal with effectively developing, drafting, and revising college level essays. And you referenced 18th century prose and Jane Austen. You did list some other classes, but you didn't explain what they were. So I have a concern in that area. And then I'll go down to the medical mathematics. Can you discuss how your organic chemistry use medical mathematics?
So I did take a lot of dual enrollment classes in high school, and so these courses that I submitted, I could not have taken without have already done, English 101, English 102. The math, the prerequisites for those classes that I took that were like honors and accelerated courses, I could not have taken without doing those prerequisites. So although I don't have the dual enrollment from the three different colleges that I did through high school, I can show you that I did take classes that met those prerequisites.
Okay, this was specific to medical mathematics that deals with drug administration, dosing, labeling, and describe the measurement system and medication calculations. Explain dosage calculations and fluid therapy calculations. Did your chemistry class cover any of that?
It covered calculations, but as far as
the ones I described,
as specific to veterinary medical
math. Medical mathematics. Is that
as specific to that? No.
No. Okay. Going on, clinical pathology, and there it talks about safety precautions, vital equipment, quality assurance in the lab, and analysis of types of examination procedures and techniques used for assessment of your analysis, differentiate between the characteristics of bacteria and forms, procedures used to assess culture media, and it goes on. And you've given general chemistry as the response to that, and I'm not seeing that correlation, but maybe you can demonstrate that. Can you tell us more about how it relates to types of examinations for clinical pathology, your analysis, bacteria, etc.?
We did labs for chemistry. A lot of these courses too play hand in hand. So chemistry, the microbiology, those are all courses that required labs.
Oh,
where
sure.
I did, exactly. Do, yeah. So where I did, you know, have to demonstrate that as well.
Okay, so you dealt with doing your analysis, and in class.
Your analysis in class? No.
No. Next, again, clinical pathology, and you listed organic chemistry. And it talks about, on the requirements side, procedures and equipment for hematology, hemostasis, clinical chemistry, and immunology. Did your organic chemistry classes include any of those?
No.
No, okay, thank you. For anesthesia for veterinary technicians, you referenced employment experience.
Correct.
And Victoria, please correct me if I'm wrong, that we can't include experience except for when it's an externship, or can we?
The way that the statute's written is that it references the work that happens with getting the degree.
So the work of getting the degree, so it's class work.
Extrapolate that to
okay. In a college or other institution approved by the board.
Right, okay. Yeah, this doesn't list those. Same with the next category below, surgical nursing. I'll just quickly go through the remainder. As you can see, I have a number of questions on equivalency. Radiography for veterinary technicians, again, you list experience, not coursework. Laboratory animal, okay, no, that one was fine. VTNE review, had nothing to do with the exam. And that is it. So I do not find that you've met the requirements. Congratulations on your bachelor's degree, but as far as meeting the requirements for a veterinary technician.
So, Victoria, can I ask a question?
Sure.
We've approved quite a few of these in the past where they had full degrees, science
correct.
Degrees. And I can guarantee you a science degree in biology probably never covered veterinary anesthesia. So how did we approve those in the past? If we're taking it like word for word for these classes, because none of those would have included that. I mean, I have a biology degree. I know I didn't take veterinary anesthesia in college. Like, how did we approve them before? And is it more the concepts, and did they get enough knowledge to be able to apply that in a veterinary anesthesia? Like, how do we look at that?
Madam Chair, members of the board, you all have the same memories as I do. Typically, there's not so much discussion and questions about that. It's usually more of an overview, a summary of what the board is comfortable with as far as that. I don't know that the board, if I can specifically answer your questions, so Dr. James, because I think that is always up to you all, is how you want to look at that.
I mean, because I've always looked at these as like, in the whole curriculum of what they did they get enough foundation of science and math and education to be able to function as a certified veterinary technician? That's how I've always looked at it. And I would say this to me meets the standards of that. But if I take it like Jane did and they did it word for word, it probably wouldn't. But no bachelor's degree would.
Like, there, it, I mean, unless your bachelor's degree is in veterinary science, like, maybe veterinary science. Like, so I'm just wondering if...
But even then, you see a lot of different courses between school to school. You have to interpret what's what.
Yeah, and then I would also say there's probably a lot that they got in a bachelor's degree that these people coming out of Penn Foster never get. So where are we taking that into account and the benefits of somebody that has a full bachelor's degree versus this other stuff? So I don't know. For me, I would say it was equivalent. That's, I guess, just what I'm...
Well, that's kind of my thought. I mean, when you look at, like I said, the comparisons here with English composition as an example to the novel Jane Austen, basically, English composition is basically English 101 to me. I mean, that's pretty basic stuff. And if you can understand Jane Austen, I think you understand English. So that kind of allows me to say, yeah, I think that's a good equivalent. Same thing with kind of the organic chemistry. Yeah, we're not going to have medical mathematics in there, but we are going to be doing a lot more advanced math, actually, calculus, derivatives, all these kinds of fun things. And honestly, in veterinary medicine, it's pretty basic math. So, I mean, if we're able to do those things, that tells me I can do addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, which is pretty much all I do in math.
and I think that, too, you know, the benefit of the technician programs is that they are geared specifically for that, right? With these people that have bachelor's degree, they're having to learn that in practice and apply what they learned in school in practice, right? So, but we've done this before, and that's what I would go back to, is this is how we've interpreted these before, and I don't see why we're doing this one differently.
Yeah. No, I mean, what I'm
seeing
here is...
I thought the batching up was, I think, using the organic chemistry more than once, and maybe it wasn't applied to the one I would have applied it to. And some of the ones that are applying it to one that, concerning the bacteria, I would have put the biology to that one. I mean, other than that, and granted, the statute doesn't say anything about experience, but I don't think it's something you totally ignore either.
Right, especially.
I mean, she's probably ready to take the test. The ultimate, the ultimate measure is, can you pass the test?
Right, and she had, you had excellent
grades. And she may have a better chance of passing that test than somebody that went through the Penn Foster program.
And when I look at the experience as well, this is a facility that oftentimes has veterinary students going through and learning concepts and things. So while it's not in the statute, it's an area where there is learning and development going on.
Okay, I think it falls to the board. If we're going to have these equivalency, we should just say, no, equivalency isn't something we can do. The statute says equivalency. So if the interpretation of that falls to the board, then we look at the applicant, their history, education, if we want to throw out experience, but we need qualified people like this in the profession. And so if the interpretation, as I understand, falls to us, then I see no problem with not nitpicking anesthesia and these type of things.
Okay, so did we
that's
have
that's why
a,
they pay us so much, because we make that determination.
There you go.
Right. Jane, was yours a motion?
If it was, I would draw it.
Okay. So do I have a different motion then?
So I make a motion to accept the equivalency and grant sitting for the test? Is that what we're doing now?
Yes.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, one nay. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you for being here today.
Appreciate it.
Okay, we are now moving on to... Okay, we are still under section number 4. We are moving on to number 7. Board may review, discuss, and take action on reportable charge from William Sean Penn, DVM. And Mr. Penn, you are here. Come on down. This is in your supplement 1. And Dr. Byrne, you are the lead on this.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to move to executive order for further clarification of legal questions.
Okay, we have a motion to move into executive session in a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.